Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
And it's good to have you on this edition of Africa Link, your window to the stories making headlines across Africa. I'm Crispin Mwakideo in Bonn. Coming up, more than 200 people fleeing South Sudan's fighting are feared dead after their boat capsized in the Nile River.
The boat was completely crowded and more than 200 people have been on board and almost all of them died. It was only the captain and a few passengers that survived.
Zambians concerned about the rise of political violence being witnessed in the copper-rich nation.
The kind of violence that we are seeing now is scary because these political cadres are going even on the streets, you know, with machetes.
These stories and more coming up in the next 25 minutes. I'll be right back.
Top story.
Fleeing from danger to death. At least 200 people have died after a boat loaded with fleeing South Sudanese refugees sank in the Nile River. In a moment, we'll be talking to our correspondent in South Sudan. Meanwhile, Philip Aguer, the South Sudanese military spokesman, has said that fighting between rebels and government forces was only 70 kilometers away from the capital, Juba. The front lines in the clashes, which have taken an ethnic dimension, have been constantly shifting as loyalist troops and renegade forces gain and lose territory. The violence has displaced more than 400,000 people, according to the United Nations. The World Food Programme's East and Central Regional Director, Valerie Guarneri, told reporters in Rome she was concerned with the numbers of people her organisation can't reach.
Right now, we have access to people who are who have been affected by the conflict and are living on or near the unmissed bases and these protection of civilian areas. But there are very few places outside those areas in the conflict-affected states that we've been able to access the population.
The WFP official also said 10% of its food stock, enough to feed some 180,000 people for a month in South Sudan, had been looted.
Right now, we're relying on food that we'd pre-positioned in South Sudan for other activities. But moving forward, we're going to need at least $57 million, but likely more, in order to assist the conflict-affected people.
World Food Programme's East and Central Africa Regional Director, Valerie Guarneri. South Sudanese rebels on Tuesday claimed to have captured the town of Malaka in Upper Nile State. But there was no independent confirmation of the rebel claim. Adrian Krish was in Malaka a day before the fighting broke out, and I asked him if he knew more about the boat tragedy.
Well, there are lots of rumors around, but nothing is really confirmed about how the accident really happened. It is only clear that many days ago people started fleeing from the town of Malaka because they were actually expecting another attack by the rebels on the town. So they tried to take boats to the other side of the River Nile, which is said to be much safer. So a lot of boats operators started operating this trip from one side of the river to the other with very high prices actually, but also a lot of boats were in a very bad condition. So the particular boat we are talking about, there were several media reports now who said that the boat was completely crowded and more than 200 people have been on board and almost all of them died. It was only the captain and a few passengers that survived.
And while you are in Malaka, what was the situation there? How tense or how calm was the place?
Well, actually, I was there on Sunday when the boat accident happened. But when we were on the ground, no one really knew about it because the accident happened a bit outside of town. So on Sunday, when I was there, the army was still in control of the town and actually talked to the governor of the state there. And he said it was safe and he even advised people to return to the town. But by that time, actually, only a few people did that. Most of the people were still leaving town. So the town was quite empty with a lot of people or some people walking on the streets, carrying all their stuff, leaving town because they were fearing that other things might happen again. The market was already looted. And many people I talked to were obviously traumatized and expected, as I said, another attack by the rebels. So, and this is exactly what happened this Tuesday. According to the United Nations, there are heavy fights again in Malaka. And the number of refugees in the closest United Nations refugee camp has actually doubled in the last days.
And do the people view this event as a turning point in South Sudan's crisis, or have they completely given up on any solution?
Well, I wouldn't say they see it as a turning point because, this was just another very bad incident that happened. People see it as very sad that so many innocent people passed away, but there's not really a turning point that can be expected. Still, there are heavy fights going on in several parts of the country, and no one really expects that to end anytime soon.
And let's now turn to the talks in Addis Ababa. What can you tell us about them?
Well, there's actually hardly any observer in southern Sudan who really believes that the peace negotiations will be settled anytime soon. Both sides have been negotiating now for many days without any real result. So what happens now instead is that both sides try to improve their negotiation position on the battlefield. So government forces took over Bentiu on Friday, the town of Bentiu, while the rebels started another attack on Malaka now. So it's basically more happening on the battlefield. However, President Salva Kiir is supposed to give a press conference, so no one really knows what he will announce, but that Salva Kiir is giving a press conference hasn't happened for quite a while.
I was speaking to Adrian Krish.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
Under fire for firing. The Zambian police has been criticized for using batons and firing tear gas on a crowd of opposition activists. The crowd had gathered outside a police station in the capital, Lusaka. They had come to offer support to Hakainde Hichilema, leader of the United Party for National Development, UPND. Hichilema had been summoned by the police to answer allegations he had made that militia were attempting to harm Frank Bwalya, another opposition figure. Bwalya was charged last week with defamation after he compared President Michael Sata to a potato. I've been speaking to our correspondent Kathy Sikombe to find out the mood in the capital.
The situation is calm at the moment and everything has returned back to normal, but there is a sense of fear amongst the citizens at the escalating violence really that we have seen, especially in the past few months. So people are scared.
And what reasons did the government give for using force against the crowd that had gathered outside the police station?
They said that the party cadres were trying to force their way into the police station, so they were trying to keep them away. And as a result of that, they just started beating up anyone in sight, including a member of parliament, as well as a journalist. They were badly beaten. So really, those are some of the reasons they've given. And other stakeholders have said that the police actually sent in a lot of police officers to just handle the situation. And they're accusing the police of brutality and working with the government of the day and being actually very, very selective, so they say, because they've accused the government of, and the police in particular, of not really looking at the interest of other interest groups, but the ruling patriotic front. So people are really not happy about that.
You mentioned earlier that there has been an increase in political violence in recent months. How does one explain this increase in political violence in Zambia?
Firstly, I think especially the youths in the political parties had a lot of high expectations from the Patriotic Front. Remember, after 20 years of ruling MMD, a lot of people were expecting a lot. And the Patriotic Front did not tell the people what they were not going to do. So it's been 2 years plus now, and people are waiting. There are still no results. And the kind of violence that we are seeing now is scary because these political cadres are going even on the streets, you know, with machetes and just scaring anyone in sight. And so far, some people have died in these same violent activities. So really, it's quite scary and unprecedented in Zambia, especially that it's been a peaceful nation all along.
And what do Zambians feel or think about the political direction that their country is now taking?
They are not happy. They think that they've been taken for a ride and that the government of the day now has not fulfilled its promises. And one of the contentious issues really is the constitution-making process. They did promise that within 90 days they were going to deliver. It's now more than 2 years. Nothing has come out. And anyone who asks is, you know, labeled an enemy of the government. And also, if it's a political opposition, political party leader, they are detained, as can be seen from what has happened. And even for Hakainde Hichilema, this is not the first time that he is being arrested. Even last January 2013, he was arrested for defamation of the president. So these are some of the archaic laws that Zambia still has and still keeps on holding on to, you know, to oppress divergent views.
Kathy Sikombe in Lusaka.
Africa on the move.
Well, now let's turn to something more positive. Unless, of course, you are one of the 100,000 children in Liberia who has to be injected against pneumonia. Some 7,000 Liberian children lost their lives to the disease in 2013 alone, a worrying nightmare for a country recovering from a brutal civil war. The ongoing vaccination campaign is now seen as a major chance to save lives in Liberia. Our correspondent Julius Kanuba visited one of the vaccination facilities and sent us this report.
I am now standing at the Redemption Hospital. This is one of Liberia's busiest medical facilities. Mothers have brought their children for a pneumonia vaccination, and as they await patiently for their turn to have their babies vaccinated, the cries of their babies fill the atmosphere, oblivious of what awaits them. Last year alone, at least 700 children died from pneumonia, prompting the Liberian government and its partners to launch a massive campaign to save thousands of children under the age of one from contracting the deadly disease. Some of the mothers I spoke to could not hide their excitement about the vaccination program.
My name is Catherine Brown. I put my baby for vaccine. I feel happy because when the children take the vaccine, the sickness can't catch them, can't knock them down.
My name is Heather Fatoma. I have Francis Amma, my son. I pray for vaccination. It's going on fun. Yeah, they put our encouragement to bring the children for the fasting because they said that the fasting is good for the children.
I got that chule. Because it's going on fun. I see the fasting helping us, helping the children too.
The officer in charge of the outpatient department at the Redemption Hospital, Emmanuel Lansana, is pleased with the turn up.
As you can see, it's very hectic. Our facility has been a very, very busy facility from time to time. But what we have noticed is that there have been increase in the patient load because of this, the pneumococcal vaccine has been introduced. A lot of our patients, our mothers, caretakers, being aware of the danger of pneumonia, the patient load has grown even more and more.
According to health officials, over 1,000 medical workers have been deployed in 500 facilities across Liberia to administer the vaccine, a move seen as a major boost to the health sector. Talbot Yenswa is an assistant minister at the Ministry of Health and Social Welfare of Liberia.
We will be immunizing this year alone about 100,000 plus children in our country. This is significant. Last year, we lost about 7,000 children from pneumonia alone. So if we had this vaccine in our EPI, we would have averted those deaths.
The start of this latest vaccine exercise is seen as a major boost to Liberia's health sector, especially the fight against infant death, a key aspect of the Millennium Development Goals.
Julius Kanuba in Monrovia.
Listen to Africa Link where and when you want. Subscribe to our podcast and you will get the latest edition sent to you. Log on to mediacenter.dw.de/English/podcasts and look out for the Africa Link podcast. Africa Link, bringing you the story where and when you want it.
And now to Nigeria, where the country's military on Tuesday blamed Boko Haram militants for a bomb attack. The blast, which happened in a crowded market in the northern city of Maiduguri, killed at least 17 people. The bombing comes as Nigerian Muslims are marking the birth of Prophet Muhammad. Pastor Yohana Buro is the founder of Peace, Revival and Reconciliation Foundation in Kaduna. He has been encouraging Christians in Nigeria to join their fellow Muslim countrymen and women to mark this holiday. For technical reasons, his answers are now read by Isaac Mugabe.
Christianity is very clear on how to treat each other's religion, whether you're a Christian or not. It says you should love your enemy, pray for those who persecute you, do to others what you want others to do to you. These are some of the things that motivated me. What is happening in Nigeria, I come from northern Nigeria, from Kaduna State, and Jabba by tribe. We know what is happening exactly for almost 13 years now in Nigeria, whereby Christians are killing Muslims and Muslims are killing Christians in the name of religion, but they don't really eat into the really issue of politics.
Is peace being achieved between the Muslims and the Christians in northern Nigeria through these joint celebrations?
Yes, peace.
There is peace in northern Nigeria. We are not saying that there are no scanty kind of attacks. Things are changing faster, and we are believing in a better Nigeria, a better system of governance, not only in Africa, but also in the whole world.
And has there been any criticism from either the Muslim or the Christian groups in observing this holiday together?
Yes, there are certain people
who may not comfort you. I am a man of my word. And for the lack of understanding of some Nigerians, we take our time and go to villages and communities to tell them about the truth on what the Bible says about relationships.
Well, you are also a member of the interfaith or interreligious dialogue, and you've been actively involved in the efforts to bring Boko Haram and the government to the negotiating table. What can you tell us about the progress of this dialogue?
Government must go beyond what they're doing.
The government has gone beyond what they are doing. It must bring people, genuine peace-loving people and genuine NGOs, not politicians. Those people are for financial deals. They are not who have peace at heart, those who work for the love of peace and peacemakers.
Pastor Yohana Buro in Kaduna.
Making a difference.
Women power. When 12 women in Rwanda came together in 2007 to simply exchange ideas on how they can overcome poverty, little did they know they would one day change the lives of other women in their community. Now they have come to be known as Nyamirambo Women's Centre. Supported by a Slovenian organisation, the centre is a beehive of activities for socially marginalised women. It offers them free literacy education and other skills such as tailoring. As Flora Kaitesi reports, this way, they've been able to earn a decent living and send their children to school.
This is the Women's Centre in Nyamirambo, a densely populated suburb located just 5 kilometres from the city centre of Rwanda's capital, Kigali. I find the women at this centre bent over their sewing machines and occasionally looking up to adjust a seam or straighten the fabric. Others who are not using the sewing machines are using needles to make knit stitches on African print fabric. Most of these women were jobless before coming here to learn new skills. Marie Eme Omujeni is the president of Nyamirambo Women's Centre.
We started the group just women who are neighbors, friends, just to be together and share ideas. Then at the end of 2008, we got a chance to meet two women from Slovenia. They just come in Rwanda as researchers about women's issues. They help us to start helping each other, like help the women in the community of Nyamirambo to open like a class of literacy. Just for those women who don't know how to read and write, so they can come and learn how to read and write.
The center was founded in 2007, and most of the new members were single mothers with dependents and girls who had missed an opportunity to pursue further education. With funding from the Slovenian Peace Institute, the center has now expanded from teaching how to read and write the English language, tailoring and ICT training, as Marie Eme explains.
Let's say, for example, for those women who come for computer class and English class, when they go outside to look for a job. They have this opportunity that they know English and they know how to use a computer. And for those who are learning, let's say, sewing and handcraft here, they can sell the product and get money.
Eugenie Mukamugunga is one of the English students and a beneficiary.
My name is Eugenie. I live at Biryogo. I'm studying English in Nyamirambo Men Center. I am working in Nyamirambo Men Center. I'm sewing machine.
Janet Mukeshimana and Rehema Nirere are other members. The center has offered them different skills and they are now earning a decent living. They make items such as table mats, blankets, and weave baskets and jewelry, among other things. On average, they make around $60 a month, depending on how much they can produce. To them, this amount of money is better than nothing at all.
After school, I come here to study handicrafts, and I get a small income to pay daily bus fares and buy school material.
I was a student, but I didn't have enough money to continue with my education. But now I earn a living from the skills I learned here.
Nyamirambo Women's Center has become popular with local and international volunteers. I met Monica Tabit, a volunteer from Switzerland, who was also impressed by the work of these women. She offered to assist them in managing the center.
So I'm providing support in management and their organizational structure. And at the same time, I'm also providing support in this new income-generating project, which is a sewing project where we are developing new products for household children's clothes with a new design, trying to help the women who come to the center to earn some money, but also for the center to earn some income and maybe one day become more sustainable.
The major challenge, according to the center's president, is motivating the women to stay committed to their schedules, as many have children and cannot afford to spend full days there. It currently has over 50 women working and learning new skills. They are targeting international markets in order to increase the supply of the items they produce.
Flora Kaitesi in Kigali. And for our Crossroads Generation fans, here's something to look forward to.
Hey, Dan, can I talk to you?
What, Mercy?
Dan, look, I know things are difficult between us right now, but I have a serious problem, and I think you're the only one who can help me with it.
What is it? How can I help you?
It really bothers me that I have to ask you, but my father couldn't give me any money this week for lunch or public transport. Trudy's offered to help, but she already helped me out last time.
Mercy, you can always rely on me. After class, I'll give you some cash. Anything else?
No, that was it.
Oh, okay. Bye then. Trudy! Trudy, wait a minute!
Dan, what do you want from Trudy?
What? You don't want me to talk to other students now either?
But why Trudy? She's my friend, Dan.
So, you mean if she's your friend, she can't be my friend?
Don't miss the 19th episode of That Learning by Ear radio novella on Thursday, right here on Africa Link. Just before we go, a reminder of our main stories. At least 200 people in South Sudan are feared dead after their boat sank in the Nile River while fleeing violence. Nigeria's military has accused Boko Haram of bombing a market in which more than a dozen have been killed. We've also been hearing about the rising cases of political violence in Zambia. And that's all we had for you in this edition of Africa Link. You can send in your comments and suggestions in a text message to +491609575910 and email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. Thank you for listening, and I'm Crispin Wakideu in Bonn.